भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. This is Canto 8, Chapter 5, entitled The Demigods Appeal to the Lord. Today we're on text number 28.
Ajasya chakram to ajaya iryamanam manomayam panchadasha aram asho trinabhi विद्युत जलम अष्टनेमी यद अक्षम आहो तम ऋतम प्रपद्ये अजस्य चक्रम त्वजये यमानम मनोमयम पंचदशारमाशु तृणाभि विद्युच्चलमष्टनेमी यदक्षमाहुस्तमृतं प्रपद्ये अजस्य चक्रं त्वचयेर्यमाणम् मनोमयं पञ्चदशारमाशु तृणाभि विद्युच्चलमष्टनेमी यदक्षमाहुस्तमृतं प्रपद्ये अजस्य चक्रं त्वचयेर्यमाणम् मनोमयं पञ्चदशारमाशु तृणाभिविद्युच्चलमष्टनेमि यदक्षमाहुस्तमृतं प्रपद्ये.
Thank you.
Ladies. Ajasya, of the living being. Chakram, the wheel, the cycle of birth and death in this material world. To, but, ajaya, by the external energy of the Supreme Lord. Yiryamanam, going around with great force. Manahamayam, which is nothing but a mental creation, depending chiefly on the mind. Panchadasha, 15. Adam, possessing spokes. Ashu, very quick. Trinabhi, having three knaves. Three modes of material nature. Vidyut, like electricity. Jalam, moving. Ashtanemi, made of eight fellies. The eight external energies of the Lord. Bhumir, Apo, Analo, Vayu, etc. Yat, who? Aksham, the hub. Aho, they say. Tam, unto him. Ritam, the fact. Prapadye, let us offer our respectful obeisances. Translation. In the cycle of material activities, the material body resembles the wheel of a mental chariot. The 10 senses, 5 for working and 5 for gathering knowledge, and the 5 life airs within the body form the 15 spokes of the chariot's wheel. The 3 modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are its center of activities. And the 8 ingredients of nature, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego, comprise the rim of the wheel. The external material energy moves this wheel like electrical energy. Thus, the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub, or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul and the ultimate truth. We offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Please repeat. In the cycle of material activities, the material body resembles the wheel of a mental chariot. The 10 senses, 5 for working and 5 for gathering knowledge, and the 5 life airs within the body form the 15 spokes of the chariot's wheel. The 3 modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are its center of activities. And the 8 ingredients of nature, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego, comprise the rim of the wheel. The external material energy moves this wheel like electrical energy. Thus, the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul and the ultimate truth. We offer our respectful obeisances unto him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The cycle of repeated birth and death is figuratively described herein. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 5, Apareyamitastvanyam prakatim vidhime param jivabhutam mahabaho yayedam taryate jagat. The entire world is going on because the living entity who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord is utilizing the material energy. Under the clutches of the material energy, the Jivatma is revolving on the wheel of birth and death under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The central point is the Supersoul. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, 1861, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutani yantrarurhani mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities, who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The material body of the living entity is the result of the conditioned soul's activities. And because the supporter is the Supersoul is the true reality. Every one of us, therefore, should offer respectful obeisances to this central reality. One should not be misguided by the activities of this material world and forget the central point, the absolute truth. That is the instruction given here by Lord Brahma. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadama Hyam Dadati Svabhadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaragunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganalalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakalpatrupyashta Kripa Sindhupe Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namonama Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Ajasya Chakram Tvajayer Yamanam Manomayam Pancha Dacharam Asho Trinabhi Vidyut Chalam Ashtanemi Yet Aksham Ahus Tam Ritam Prapadye. In the cycle of material activities, the material body resembles the wheel of a mental chariot. The 10 senses, 5 for working and 5 for gathering knowledge, and the 5 life airs within the body form the 15 spokes of the chariot's wheel. The 3 modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are its center of activities, and the 8 ingredients of nature, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego, comprise the rim of the wheel. The external material energy moves this wheel like electrical energy. Thus, the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul and the ultimate truth. We offer our respectful obeisances unto him. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're informed that the absolute truth, or the supreme personality of Godhead, or the super soul, is revealed. Although he is one and the same entity, he is revealed in different aspects according to our attitude and our activities in approaching him. If our approach is chiefly impersonal, then he is revealed in impersonal terms. And this is known as Brahman, the all-pervading absolute truth. If we are somewhat more focused on the Lord as a person, then he becomes the director of our activities, the provider of intelligence, or forgetfulness, as it were. And we may even come to the stage of meditating upon him within the heart as the four-armed Paramatma, the subject matter of the yogi's meditation. Dhyanavastita tadgatena manasa pasyantiyam yoginaha. But the ultimate feature of the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Govinda, the supreme controller of all controllers, who has no origin other than himself, who has a divine spiritual, completely unsullied by Maya, spiritual form comprised of Satchidananda. So it's not clear in this verse which one of these Lord Brahma is referring to, because he's referring to all of them at the same time. Srila Prabhupada's translation reflects this when he says, "Thus the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul and the Ultimate Truth." That means Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, all at the same time. "We offer our respectful obeisances unto him." It would seem as if it's important for us to understand what the acharyas have here said is the adhishtanam. Adhishtanam means your location, locus. In Latin we say, adhishtana means the place. Those who have studied Bhagavad Gita know that there are five factors of action that are mentioned there in chapter 18. Anybody know the verse I'm thinking of? If Vijaya were here, he would know it. One moment. It's an important verse that we should study. Adhishtanam tatha karta. Karanam cha pratak vidham, vividhascha pratak cheshta daivam chaivatra panchamam. There are five factors of action that Krishna outlines here. One is the place, adhishtanam. The other one is the doer. The other one is the instrument or the reason. And the other one is the endeavor itself. And finally, daiva, fate, the Supreme Lord. So adhishtanam, the place, is one of these factors of action. So for the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the adhishtanam is this Brahman energy, this absolute truth. So that's being particularly pointed out here. There are some words here that are very significant. Generally, the chief, all these words are actually in the primary case, but the chief designation given here is Aksha. Aksha. Anybody know what Aksha means? Adhokshaja? Huh? Yeah. Especially usually it means eyes. It means quite a few things, actually, Aksha. One of the things that Aksha means is Adhishtana, the place. Another thing is axis, or an axle of a wheel, the central hub, in other words. These are all things that we're hearing, either from the acharyas or from Prabhupada in his translation and purport. Wheel is also aksha. Religious knowledge, the senses are called aksha, especially the eyes. Therefore, Krishna's famous as Aravindaksha, lotus-eyed Lord. Window, seed, just like we have Rudraksha, the seed of Shiva. They chant their japa there on the Shaivas. Dice or gambling, that's also Aksha. It means quite a few things. So here it means chiefly the axle or the wheel, aksha. And this aksha is again defined in the verse itself as ritam. Those who've studied Bhagavad Gita also know this word, or at least we've heard it. What does ritam mean? What does Arjuna say in chapter 10? Sarvam etad ritam manye. I consider that everything you've told me, Krishna, is ritam. Generally, Srila Prabhupada translates this word rita as fact or reality, ultimate truth. He doesn't actually say so very directly in this verse, but throughout his synonyms and the translation as well as the purport, Prabhupada has indicated several things here, and so have the acharyas in their commentaries. So, for example, Prabhupada says, here he's in the word for word, he says, rita means the fact, simply put. In the translation itself, Prabhupada says, the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Super Soul and the ultimate truth, that we might say. And in his, finally in his purport, Prabhupada says also that every one of us should offer our respectful obeisances unto the central reality. One should not be misguided by the activities of the material world and forget the central point. That's another possible translation. Ritam. Central reality, central support, central hub. The focal point is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the idea. So his locus of action is this Brahman energy or this material world. And we should recognize that that is only the playground of the Supreme Lord, so to speak. But actually, the Supreme Lord himself is behind everything. We have a problem here. In chapter 5 of the Bhagavad Gita, we've been taught already that the Supreme Lord does not accept anyone's sinful or pious activities. That is to say, he doesn't take responsibility. He himself is not the one who's compelling the actions of the living beings. And so therefore, he's not to be blamed when we do things and have to suffer the reactions of those things that we do. On the other hand, in the verse that Prabhupada is quoting here, we also hear Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshi Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantraruhani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. It would seem as if the Lord is ultimately behind all this, wouldn't it? So that might disturb someone. That's a possible doubt that might arise. So this verse, actually, if we give some careful thought to its... I mean, it's a very simple verse, but the content of this verse is very profound and abstruse. It's very extremely subtle. But given the comments of Srila Prabhupada and the comments of our acharyas, it's clear that the Supreme Lord is actually behind everything. Nothing happens. Not a blade of grass, we say, can wave in the breeze without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything that we do is facilitated, or as Prabhupada says here, supported by the central point, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's directing our wanderings in the sense that whatever we want, he will facilitate. He will support. Just like a good parent. A good parent doesn't necessarily force the child to do this or that, but a good parent will explain. These are your options. These are the potential consequences of your options, and you have to make a choice now. And this is exactly what Krishna does also in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone know the verse I'm thinking of? He says, Yathechasi tatha kuru. I've explained everything to you, Arjuna. It's all very clear, I think. And Arjuna confirms, yes, I've understood. Okay, so now you do what you will do. So human life is this opportunity. It's a junction. having come through so many 8,400,000 different forms in what we call the samsara chakra. Sridhar Swami has clarified that what is this chakra that we're talking about here? It means the wheel of material existence, the cycle of repeated births and deaths, in which a person is accepting one material body after another in succession. Ajaya Mayaya, by the agency of Aja. Who is Aja, or what is Aja? Huh? Unborn is the literal meaning, yeah. But acharyas have told us here that it means maya, the material energy. She's called Aja. Now, this is a strange thing, because look at the first line of the verse. What is the first word? Ajasya, a genitive singular case, means of the unborn. And Sridhar Swami says Ajasya means jivasya, of the living being. So that the same word is being used to describe the living being as is used to describe the material energy maya. Both of them are eternal. Both the living entity and the external energy, they're eternally existing. So they're both called aja. But here, it's through the agency of this maya that we are taking one body after another, after another, after another. And out of these, they're categorized broadly as 8,400,000 different forms. Only in the human form of life can we begin to think seriously about our predicament. Our predicament is the one that is described in this verse with this comparison. It's like on a wheel. You can imagine. This wheel has 15 spokes. And the 15 spokes are what? Who remembers? Five life heirs. Now, there's another problem, isn't it? Five life heirs? Who's heard of five life heirs before? Don't we usually hear of 10 life heirs? Anybody have any input here? Yeah, there is actually, it's not consistent. Sometimes they're divided into five, sometimes they're divided into 10. There are different systems given of classification. Even in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, you will not find absolute consistency in this sort of detail. And it's good to note that it is a detail. So, anyway, so we have these five life heirs that are circulating throughout the body. Those are very important categories of this central reality that are, for the most part, unknown to modern man. And even what we call medical science, they don't have any clue as to how the pranas are working. How do you explain, for example, the fact that an amputee has a subtle sense that his missing limb is still there? Because the pranas are still there, even though that section of the gross material body is missing. So these are the things. We have our five working senses, the senses with which we do things, with which we act. And then we have other senses that only take in data for central processing by the intelligence. And then we have these five life airs that are animating everything, because unless these airs are circulating within the body, you're not going to be healthy, but you may not even be able to continue living, depending on how bad the situation is. So very, very important thing to consider. All these categories. This is a synopsis here, this verse. It's a synopsis of the Sankhya categories, the categories of Sankhya philosophy that explain very clearly what is this material nature and how we fit into the picture. We have to, as long as we have the human opportunity, we have to cultivate this knowledge, because it is what separates us from all the other species of life, at least lower species of life. Animals cannot consider these things. Devas, they naturally have this understanding, so they don't need to cultivate it either. But we're a little bit in between. We have animalistic residue staining our subtle body, our default mindset, and that impels us to do animalistic things on occasion. We also have our higher nature, which cannot be repressed, because we're human beings. We have the faculty to question and to use our intelligence. Sometimes we do that. in the end of chapter 14, Krishna says very suggestively, actually, that a person should not become bewildered. He says, Prakasham cha pravrittim cha mohameva cha pandava nach nadveshti sampravrittani nanavrittani kangshati. Anybody know this verse or what it means? It means that, dear Pandava, when you see that there is moha in your life, moha means covering, illusion, bewilderment. When you see that there is hustle and bustle, that's called pravritti, very busy action, passion. And when you see that there's prakasha, what does prakasha mean? Light, enlightenment, knowledge, awareness, high nobility. These things will come and go in this material world, he's telling Arjuna. So, nadveshti sampravrittani, when these things are very prominent, when they're multiplying, sampravritti means it's in profusion. When you have them in abundance, either any of them, whatever they are, you should not hate them, nadveshti. And nanavrittani kangshati, neither should you hanker after them when you don't have them. This is what it means to be liberated. This is what it means to come to the stage of Brahma-Bhuta-Gyan. And this is what human life is for, because it is only on that platform of Brahma-Bhuta-Gyan that we can begin to sustain real commitment to pure devotional service. We know in Chapter 7, Krishna has told us already, when we are not pious, then it's difficult to do that. That's the important thing. The importance of being pious. The importance of being pious means following the rules and regulations, doing our duties, cultivating what it is to be a human being, emphasizing that above all else, because we've already hinted, we don't have infinite time to do this. It's a limited opportunity, human life. It's only a few decades and they speed up as you get older. Everybody who's gotten older knows this. Time speeds up the older you get. Before I went to kindergarten, that means when I was maybe 3 or 4, you know, for just one summer seemed to be an infinity of time. And now the years fly by. I mean, decades fly by like the years used to fly by. Time speeds up, zurur. For sure, time speeds up, or at least it seems that way. So beware and utilize this rare opportunity while it lasts. So how to utilize it, that's being indicated here. We have to consider these things, that we are impelled by maya. Impelled means, here the word is used, iryamanam, in the first line here. The acharyas glossed the word as praryamanam, which means the same thing, to be compelled or to be impelled to do something. We're pushed to act by maya. And she's working in the form of this mental chariot. On the basis of our mind, we will elevate ourselves, we will degrade ourselves, and we will act. And that's like the spinning of this wheel. The wheel is moving fast. Like lightning, vidyut chalam. Vidyut means actually lightning. And in India, when you pay your utility bill, it's called vidyut. They use this high Sanskrit word, otherwise known as bijli. But vidyut, it happens lightning fast. One of these modes can change to another mode just like that. And you're not even aware of it unless you're already in sattva-guna. Because what's the chief characteristic of sattva-guna? Awareness. And if you're in tamoguna, then that chief characteristic of tamoguna is unconsciousness, unawareness. You don't even know what's happening. And when you're in the mode of passion, you have some sense on either side. You have some sense of what's happening, and you have some sense that you don't have the full picture also. So anyway. So these three modes are very important. They're considered to be like the axle of the wheel. Now, manomayam means made out of the mind. So you can interpret that in two ways, and Srila Prabhupada has interpreted it implicitly, at least, in two ways. Manomaya literally means it's made out of the mind. Our whole corporeal existence in this mind-body complex, it's actually the effect only of the mind. Whatever mental attachments we've cultivated and whatever activities we've chosen to perform on the basis of our mind, that is what this mind-body complex that we're currently inhabiting is. And the next one depends on what we're doing now. And the last one depended on what we had done previously. This is the way it works. So manomayam, actually Sridhar Swami says manomayam means manaha pradhanam, means that the mind is central. Not that the thing is literally made only out of mind, but the mind plays a pivotal role. It's a very central role here. So that's that. And then we have the 15 senses we've described already. Ashu means shigragam. It goes very quickly. We've described that also. Treo gunaha nabhiriva madhyayasya. Nabhi means it's the central hub or the axle of a thing. And vidyureva chalam, it's going as fast as lightning, or as Prabhupada says in his modern translation, like electrical power, electrical energy. So ashtau prakatayo nemaya iva avaranani asya. We're covered by these eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Jiva Goswami has directed our attention to this verse from Bhagavad Gita. Does anybody know where is that verse found? Prabhupada is quoting the verse just before it here in his purport. Chapter 7, text... Bhumirapunalo vayo khammano buddhirevacha ahankaram itiyame bhinna prakatirishtadha. That means earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are my separated eight material energies. So they're called nemi, the separated energies of the Lord. Here, they're considered to be like the... What is it Prabhupada translates it here as? Feli. Anybody ever heard the word feli before? Huh? Yeah, I actually had to look up this word in the dictionary because it didn't register with me anyway. Feli means the outside perimeter of a wheel, or the rim of a wheel, you can say, as opposed to the hub. There are two things being mentioned here. The hub, or the nabhi, is the inside of the circle of any circle, but of a wheel in particular, and the feli is the outside. That's called naming. So the wheel is made out of these eight elements. It's impelled by the modes of material nature through the direction of Maya, acting with lightning speed, in case you haven't noticed, and the hub, or the central hub of all this activity, is the three modes of material nature which impel us. They're acting as the agents of Maya's pushing, or prayamanam, the word is used here. This is the situation. So Jiva Goswami has brought our attention to that verse. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says much the same thing. He's really kind of paraphrasing what Sridhar Swami has already stated before, but he adds one thing: tad yad aksham yah parameshwara evaksho yasya yat tad atishtanam ahu ityarthaha tam ritam prapadye. So he says that thing which we're talking about is aksha, the central hub, that is only parameshwara, the supreme personality of Godhead, but It is his adhisthanam, his location, or his basis, his locus of activity. And that is called ritam. So we mentioned already ritam means fact, but ritam actually means very, very much more than that. Ritam is almost an impossible word to describe. And even in Sanskrit literature, the word ritam is more common in the Vedas than in the later literature, so-called later literature, in the Puranas and other things. Later language, what they say is later language, it is usually replaced by the word dharma. Now, it's an interesting thing because there's a very similar idea being given in the third canto here. When Kardama Muni is praying to the Lord for a wife, of all things, he offers some very nice prayers and he says some very interesting things. For example, he says, "Your wheel, which has three knaves, rotates around the axis of the imperishable Brahman. It has 13 spokes, not 15, but 13, 360 joints, six rims, and numberless leaves carved upon it. Through its revolution, though its revolution cuts short the lifespan of the entire creation, this wheel of tremendous velocity cannot touch the lifespan of the devotees of the Lord." So because he's a learned sage, Kardama Muni is quite aware of this comparison that's being made in this verse. It's one that appears throughout the Vedic literatures. Maybe we don't notice because it's not very prominently quoted by Srila Prabhupada. But it's actually a comparison that's been made several times. And he's aware of it. With slight differences, he's kind of paraphrasing the same idea. But there's an interesting thing here. In the same statement in which he's saying that, he adds, "O my Lord, you are the master and leader of all living entities. Under your direction, all conditioned souls, as if bound up by rope, are constantly engaged in satisfying their desires. Following them, O embodiment of religion, I also bear oblations for you who are eternal time." We are impelled by ritta in the form of dharma. The Bhagavatam repeatedly reminds us. And what's the favorite example being used throughout the Bhagavatam that describes how all living beings are impelled or led to move in their respective engagements by the Supreme Lord? Just like you put a ring through the nose of a bull, and all you have to do is tug on the ring, and wherever you direct him, that bull is going to go there. This is the position of ourselves vis-a-vis the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Upanishads tell us that it is on the basis of the fact that he fulfills all desires that he can control all of us. He's supplying all desires since time immemorial. Because one thing that we cannot do is stop trying to fulfill our desires. We heard this yesterday. We cannot do this. It is entirely unnatural. It's as if you try to have this wheel, but it doesn't have any rim, it doesn't have any hub, and there are no spokes. So where's the wheel? It's not going to happen. That's why this analogy is being given here, to show us. We are intimately connected, not only with each other, especially not only with the Supreme Lord, but even with this external environment, with these eight elements that form the outer rim of the wheel. Everything is interconnected. That interconnectedness, or rather the central coursing of the ultimate reality, which is manifest and expressed through the external energy as well, that is called ritta. And that's what he's offering his obeisances to. It's a strange idea. It's kind of indirect, but Srila Prabhupada's translation at least makes it more devotional than it might otherwise appear to the non-devotional mind. So we are offering our obeisances unto him, the ultimate truth. And to make it very simple, as he usually does, Srila Prabhupada translates this as ritta, as ultimate truth. And in fact, it is used in that way. But it means actually much, much more than that, which is to say that when we hear the word truth, we don't really have the concept to match that word. The idea in a very general way, but we do not have a very fully developed concept of what truth is. This is the problem. So verses like this, like today's verse, they give us some idea. What is this rhythm? This great cosmic energy that impels all creation and orders it. Not only with normative laws, but also with natural laws. This thing is very important to understand. Generally in Western society, we have this idea that there are, well, we have the notion that there are ideals, and that the closer that you approximate your ideal, then that thing is considered to be accurate or ideal. This is not like this. This is itself an expression of this central reality. And it's a very difficult concept to express. But the highest law is the orderly coursing of the highest reality and its central being. And humanity and human laws, they only approach this partially and imperfectly. It's not a rational process. It's not a fruitive process. It's not something that can be understood. But this is the idea behind the word rita. And ultimately, the supreme rita, as Arjuna tells us, is the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because those instructions are also not different from that absolute truth. What we're looking at here is an abstract, simultaneous oneness and difference of the Lord and his energy. That's the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on a philosophical level. That's the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam is understood by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the philosophy that we have accepted. And we can think about it like this. Now, in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he's emphasized, as usual, the primacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every one of us is being supported by the Supersoul. And no matter what choices we make, just like I mentioned already, a good parent will always support the children, never reject the children, no matter what bad choices the children may make. This is the Supreme Lord's position also. He has unconditional love. Just as we have very little concept of what truth is, we also have very little concept of what love is. And those two are connected. So Lord is acting on this transcendental level. The easiest way for us to approach him and to understand these teachings through experience, as we heard yesterday, is the very deceptively simple process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And especially if we can get other people to do this, that's even better still. This pleases Krishna tremendously, like nothing else. When Krishna sees that someone is chanting his holy name in sincerity, then he becomes very interested. He becomes very interested. And he begins to reciprocate with the sincere steps that we take towards him. This is the point. So when we do this, all these abstruse philosophical abstractions that we're reading about in this verse, they become naturally intuitively perhaps manifested to us through the agency of this super soul. The interconnectedness of the internal and the external energy and all living entities within it becomes clear. The oneness of Brahman, Paramatman, and Bhagavan becomes clear. Even if you cannot articulate how, because it's supralogical. Supralogical means above logic. Achintya khalu ye bhavana tan starkini yojiyat. Cannot apply reason or consequentialism to something which is essentially above that. And that's what we're talking about here. But if we study Bhagavad Gita very carefully, and especially if we study Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully, and act according to the instructions that we receive, then gradually this all becomes revealed to us. So this is very nice instructions, or in the form of prayers, are being given by Lord Brahma. What's the context here again? The demigods are all pretty worried because they're being killed en masse, and they're not at a high point. There's not a whole lot that they can do about it. All of us are in this condition at one point or another. Because Kalidas, the Sanskrit poet, he also gives this analogy. it's like the spokes of a wheel. And that wheel is turning very quickly at lightning speed. And what's on top today is going to be on the bottom tomorrow. But it's not even a question of today and tomorrow. We're talking about split nanoseconds. The wheel is moving so fast that what is the significance of our temporal position in this material world? Whatever we think that it's a long, long time, a lifetime. But it's nothing. It's like a flash in the eternal scope of things. So we will go down, even if we're up now. And if we're down now, then we will go up. This is one of my favorite quotes. Winston Churchill said, if you're going through hell, keep going. So this is the idea. Everything in this material world is temporary. It's manifested only in a flash, illusory flash. We've already been discussing this, but although it's an illusion, it's not an illusion at the same time. It is reality, in that it's a manifestation of this central reality, this ultimate absolute truth, as ultimately as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So devotional service is the purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The best mode of devotional service is to hear about Krishna and to chant Krishna's name. And when we do that, he becomes very pleased, and he reveals all these things to us as if automatically. We hardly have to endeavor separately, which is to say we only have to endeavor separately to cultivate this knowledge, because that's also a part of devotional service. I'm going to stop here. Does anybody have any questions or comments on any of these things? Okay, first, Sachitanoi Prabhu.
For us simple-minded persons to get the absolute truth. Otherwise, we can become distracted.
Actually, most of the Acharya's commentaries on this verse are composed of simple definitions of the words, which is where Prabhupada is getting his synonyms from in this translation. But you've kind of indicated a very important point that I'd like to elaborate on, which is that how do we know what a word means? How do we know what a word means? Who has an answer to this question? Where do you go to get the meaning of a word? Only from the Acharya. The agency may be a dictionary. But if you think very carefully, or if you've studied carefully enough, then you know that even the lexicographers, that means the people who write dictionaries, they have to attest whatever they're putting into their dictionary. They have to back it up with reference to some usage that is recognized. In other words, they have to say that this is what the Acharya says the word means. So ultimately, the dictionary does not tell us what the word means. It is the Acharya who tells us what the word means. In exactly the same way that Krishna in Bhagavad Gita tells us, when he's elaborating on the symptoms of real knowledge, what's the first thing that he mentions? Or one of the first things, at least. Acharya Upasanam. You have to approach the Acharya, and you have to please that Acharya. You have to worship him. So the meanings of Sanskrit words, or any words for that matter, comes from the Acharya. If he says it's a rope, it's a rope. If he says it's a snake, then it's a snake. And if he says it's a rope, and then he changes his mind, and he says that then it's a snake, then it's both. Or, you know, whatever he said most recently. This is the idea. This is devotion. And this is why we can say that it's neither man-centered, that is to say, it's neither ethnocentric, neither is it rational. People who have an undue attachment to knowledge, they cannot handle this. They get completely bent out of shape because for them, the measure of all things is the human being, and the definition of knowledge is something supposedly objective. One of my philosophy professors in college said, objectivity. What is objective? What is objectivity? He said, objectivity simply means you've got a quorum of subjective opinions. You've got enough subjective opinions that, you know, gives it enough weight that you can say that this is objective. Nobody knows anything in this world. Not even the dictionaries. It has to come from the acharya. This is to connect with that central reality that we've mentioned already. And even if we don't want to get this cerebral about it and you know, intellectualize in this way, then I mentioned it's easy enough for everybody. Anybody can take prasadam. Anybody can bow down. And anybody can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay, the one in the corner here, then we'll have to go because it's getting late.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I tried to understand when you said Lord, support, devotee. I want to understand difference when Lord support Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Udama. What the difference between that support and what means support to you?
In any condition, even as a devotee, whether one is a Madhyama Adhikari or Uttama Adhikari or Kanishtha Adhikari, the Lord is going to support and guide and nourish and help us to advance to the extent that we wish to. And even when we're not devotees, the Lord is still going to do so. He never stops doing that because he's a parent. The love is unconditional. It's not a business arrangement.
Why I'm asking, because I heard from one lecture, and Sannyasi said that Lord support only pure devotee.
That means that the Lord is going to reciprocate according to the rules of pure devotional service only with somebody who's actually following those rules of pure devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Shakale shamman kurite shakti Dehanata jatha jatha. Jatha jatha means each according to his own capacity. You don't treat all living beings the same, even though they're all spiritually the same. You have to deal with them differently. A tiger you have to treat differently than you treat your child, because they're going to act in different ways. So in exactly the same way, according to Yeyatha mam prapadyante tansateva bhajami, Krishna says, as they approach me, then I will reciprocate in kind. If we are not approaching Krishna in pure devotional service, then he's not going to reciprocate with us on that level. He will reciprocate with us, but on the level that we actually wish. This is the point. So we have to be aware. Therefore, sattva guna is so important, because you have to know what you want. And quite often we don't know what we want.
Thank you.
This is why the Shastra and all the vidhis, or the injunctions within the Shastra, always impels us to move towards sattva, because that is the platform on which advancement is possible. Otherwise, not possible. Okay, but Krishna is always going to reciprocate with us. There's no question. It's just a question of how. And devotees also do this. Spiritual master will also reciprocate, but according to how we approach. The ball is in our court eternally. This is the point. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.